Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hey Frontliners, how's it going? It's been a busy week here in Austin. Last Friday, I gave a talk at UT here downtown, and yeah, on Thursday, I'll fly off to the AAG's annual meeting in New York City. So yeah, great thing that we talked about the reuse of the High Line some episodes ago. So I will definitely try to get there and take some pictures and maybe a few sound samples for you. So, as I will be in New York till Wednesday next week, there might be a delay for next week's episode, depending on the connection speed in the hotel and the time I might have on to produce a new show. I will not only bring my mic and mixer, but also some Frontline flyers. And on geography.com/promo, we have some promotional material for the show. You know that, right? So, I took this Frontline flyer that fits perfectly on a 4-to-6-inch photo and uploaded it to a print service where I ordered some 500 prints of the flyer. So, I really hope that they'll arrive in time and so that I can hand them out next week. Would be great. And as you know, that's really something you can do and everybody can do to help the show. I used a coupon code, by the way, and so I got 60 prints for free out of that 500. So that's not so bad. And so if you're ordering only a smaller number, like this 60 prints, or sometimes it's 75 or 100 free prints, of the flyers, you might end up only paying $2 or $3 or euros for shipping. So that really helps. So thank you so much to all of the Frontliners who already did that. And your support is highly appreciated, really. Thank you. And if you are new to the show, could be, right? Welcome to Frontline, to the Frontline community. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or check out our Facebook page. That would be facebook.com/geography. Or send in your comments. Email address is comment@geography.com. And to call this guy voicemail, simply type in geography into the panel on Skype. So what are we talking about today? Let's see. As there is not so much feedback on urban reuse yet, but might still come in, who knows. We'll have just a short recap on it. And besides the sound riddle and Alexander von Humboldt's voyage to the Americas and a really nice piece of music, actually two pieces of music, we'll talk about soundscapes. The reason I wanted to talk about soundscapes today is that part of my current research and my upcoming talk at the AAG will be about urban sound. It's not so much about soundscapes itself, but more about the impact sound can have on the urban dweller. But to start with the topic more generally, it's worth to take a look at the original soundscape studies that somewhat started in the 1960s and 1970s, around that time. So why are sounds important for geography? If you try to think of individual perception, right, and awareness of the urban environment, you realize pretty quickly that most of the time we're talking about visual elements. But there are certainly more, like smell or sound. And I think that to learn more about that impacts like sound, that this widens our perception and lets us see or hear more. And by the way, this is exactly why we have our section What's That Sound in the show, right? One sound riddle per week, where we can try to find out what source produces that sound. And we'll have one later in the show. So let's take sound as an existing part of the urban environment, okay? And let us talk about it for a minute. So most of the time, sound is addressed with the category of music. If we take a look at geographical studies. So especially social geography produces really fascinating results when talking about topics like there is an article called The Place of Music from Leishon and Metlus and Revel. Yeah, and there's one from Johansson and Bell, and that's called Sound Society and the Geography of Popular Music. So you see, most of the time it's about music, really, when there's sound research in geography. And both articles, the links to that articles are available in today's show notes. And just go to this week's episode page on geography.com or take a look at the metadata of the audio file in podcatchers like iTunes, or check out our Facebook wall. As I did that before, I'll do it this week too, just to post the show notes to the Facebook wall, and then you can have a look at all the hyperlinks and literature and everything that's there. That's great. So whatever. So besides music, if we are talking about urban sound, there are other sounds that occur in the environment, not especially in the urban environment, but okay. I'll most of the time stick with the urban environment because that's where my research, or what my research is about. So think about traffic, for example, yeah? Cars, trucks, motorbikes, sirens, planes, and so on, yeah? Or what about human sounds, like people talking, cell phone conversations, the sound of feet walking through the streets, joggers, shouting, you name it. Leaves and trees, birds, you would have dogs, water, wind, and so on. That's, all nature sounds, different kinds of nature sounds. You would have that too. Find that in the urban environment, in the urban soundscape. So to start from the beginning, and not to get lost in this cacophonic mix, the World Soundscape Project started to deconstruct the soundscape. Let's start off with a definition, okay? We may speak of an acoustic environment as a soundscape. We can isolate an acoustic environment as a field of study, just as we can study the characteristics of a landscape. This is from Schaeffer's book, Murray Schaeffer's book, The Soundscape, The Tuning of the World, from 1977. And by the comparison of landscape and soundscape, you can already see and tell that's an older text, right? And with a very traditional understanding of what a landscape is. But as one of the founders of the World Soundscape Project, he and his colleagues first gathered empirical data about the soundscape. And how did they do that? They just went out and did some recordings, audio recordings, just record the raw urban sound that's out there. Just take a mic and a recorder and press record and walk through the streets. That's it. And they would do that most of the time in Vancouver and Canada, because this research group, World Soundscape Project, is a Canadian group. And they went on sound walks. And a sound walks, and I'm citing again, a sound walk is any excursion whose main purpose is listening to the environment. It is exposing our ears to every sound around us, no matter where we are. And that's a quote from Hildegard Westerkamp's article, Sound Walking. It's called Sound Walking. That's from 1974, so kind of old. And question is, how does a sound walk sound like? If you've never done this and listened to one, here's an example. And this actually was a snippet from a sound walk I did myself back in, I think it was 2010, when I did some sound research in Lisbon, Portugal. And could you hear different kinds of sounds? I think you can hear something like people walking and talking, and some shopping music and church bells, in the background, and siren of an ambulance or a police car or something like that, and there was a dog, I think, barking of a dog. So now, to deconstruct all these sounds and to cut them into single pieces, this research group, the World Soundscape Project, they would record only single sound events. And to do that, they would have to step up really close to the sound source while recording. And then they would end up with something like this. Thank you. Oh, wait. I just had an idea. Perhaps we should take a short break and integrate this week's sound riddle right here. What do you think?
What's that sound?
Because, as I said before, this section is all about sensitizing ourselves for the acoustic elements that can occur in this city, right? And last week, we tried to find out what the source of this sound was like. Let me find it here on my keypad. There it is. Yeah. Unfortunately, nobody had any idea. It was a pretty short one, okay? This sound was caused by a train passing by. Huh? You can hear that? A train passing by. Da-da-da-da-da-da. So, let's come back to that single sound event I just played back to you. And I was just talking about. Here it is again. So this one is quite a bit longer, and I think you can get an idea what this is, right? Or what caused that sound, right? And if you do, please send in your guess to comment@geography.com. Just say, hey, I'm Torsten or whatever, writing from Austin, you name it. And I think this was a waterfall or whatever, what you just thought. You can post your thought directly on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/geography. I've said that before. That's a pretty easy way to do that. And by doing so, you can let other frontliners see what your thought was on the sound and they can respond. And so we can have a kind of a little discussion going on, perhaps an argument or so. Yeah. So tell us about your guesses on this week's sound riddle. You can also do that with your own voice, right? Yeah, just open Skype and call the Skype voicemail. Skype name is Geography. And then we can hear in your own words from you what you thought or think this sound might be. Yeah, but I was talking about single sound events, and so let's continue with our talk about soundscapes. So after recording the raw sound in Soundwalks, yeah, and collecting lots of single sound events, like the one I just showed you, Schaefer tried to categorize these sounds even further. That's not such a bad idea, because otherwise you would just end up with hundreds of single sound events and so what, right? So you want to categorize and find out more about these sounds. So we could go on now and talking about the whole range of categorization, but I think we stop here and I let you decide if you want to continue to talk about it in one of the next episodes, right? Just let me know, sending in your feedback, and just give me short feedback if you think it's worth talking about it anymore. Or not. Or come up with something else, some other suggestions and topics we can discuss here in the show. So the soundscape, to make that very brief, according to Schaefer, consists of three major elements, and that's really a base for soundscape studies and has nothing to do yet with deconstructing it or categorizing. It's kind of deconstructing, but not categorizing. So three major elements is built of: the keynote, the signal, and the sound mark. So what's that? The keynote builds the base for any soundscape, and it contains kind of vague sounds like traffic or wind, and if you have cars passing by, it's not so easy, or it's almost impossible to tell what sounds emerge from which vehicle, and so altogether it becomes more or less like a base layer that's always there and cannot be deconstructed any further. And so this would be called the keynote. And then second category would be the signals. And a signal can really easily be identified. These are all the sounds you would collect as single sound events, by the way. And they can always be heard. Take the siren of an ambulance, for example. Yeah, this would be a signal. If it starts, you hear it as a singular sound event. And it signifies something more than just being a single sound event. It has a certain meaning. Like, here comes the ambulance, watch out, drive to the side and let me pass by. So that's the meaning of the signal. But you could hear that. And if you would have all the cars passing by and you would hear that them as a keynote, just as bass, that one siren you could always hear. And so that's why it's defined as a signal. Last category would be the sound mark. The sound mark. What's a sound mark? This one is kind of tricky because it's described as a community sound. So what's a community sound? Yeah, something that represents a certain location or a neighborhood. And yeah, like best example would be the bells of Big Ben in London. And when you hear that, they are almost always associated with the city of London in England, right? So especially sound from this category, I think is not so easy to identify, because you would have to know what a community would identify as a typical sound mark first. Yeah? And then you could start, and I did that, by the way, in Lisbon. You could start with questionnaires or narrative interviews, ask people, hey, what would be a typical sound for your downtown area or what for your neighborhood or for your city whatsoever. And but this really is some kind of vague because people, as I said, are not so much spending so much time listening actively to the urban sounds. It's more visual aspects we look at. If you're talking about what did you hear in New York City, you wouldn't ask that, right? What did you see? What was it like? And you would answer, yeah, I saw this and that, and would name all the different landmarks, right? Important things, tourist sites, and you wouldn't normally talk about sounds, right? I don't know. I might be wrong. So just send me some comments and correct me on this one. But I think we're more kind of a visual society. And so it's hard, and especially hard then to get people to talk about or reflect about what a sound mark for a certain neighborhood might be if you are not spending so much attention to it anyways. So, what I wanted to show you with this introduction into soundscape research is that there's a lot more in the urban environment that can be paid attention to than only the visual element. And if you think about the impact sound can have on you, you soon realize that there's a geographical relevance to it, for sure. So, for example, do you prefer to walk in public green spaces only because the trees are so green, or also because it's more quiet than the nearby highway? And can you stand pretty loud motorbikes like a Harley, or does this sound simply annoys you? And right here we could talk about individual perception and so on. Or do you consider the sounds of children playing to be noise? Or is it pleasant sound? Ask somebody who lives in the street of a preschool or something, or kindergarten. Is the sound of children playing noise or not? So, as you can see, there are all kinds of questions that can arise out of the discussion on urban sound. And I think it's extremely interesting. Yeah. Okay, that's why I'm doing my research on it and preparing a book on urban sound right now. But as I said, if you want to talk more about urban sounds, just let me know. Email, voicemail, Facebook wall. They are all open 24/7. Yeah, and this is a song that kind of ends our discussion about sound, at least for now. Because these are Max and the Wild Things from the album Max and the Wild Things with their song Without a Sound. Turn up the volume for this one. She just wants to get left off her feet, but not by my groove. She just wants to dance all night, but not too much.
our toes. She turns around and frowns and sits down without a sound. She just whirls and twirls and unfurls and curls my toes. She turns around and frowns and sits down without a sound. She just wants to get swept off her feet, but not by my broom. She just wants to dance all night, but not to my tune. She just wants to set the world on fire, but not with my flame. She just wants to put it out, but not with my rain. She just whirls and twirls and unfurls and it curls my toes. She turns around and frowns and sits down without a sound.
Max and the Wild Things with the song Without a Sound from the PodSafe Music Network. You can access the site on music.mevio.com. In both links to the German and US store, to the album, to download the album and buy the album or only the song for 99 cents. Yep, they are as always in the show notes. And now it's time again to take a quick look at our Facebook wall. All the latest posts from last week, you can find them on facebook.com/jogfree. That's Frontline on Facebook. You might already know it, but in case you are new to the show, I'll mention it again. Our Facebook page should really not only contain my own posts. Of course, I always let you know about new released episodes, about links to the quick vote and the sound riddle and posts. Like the show notes. But Frontline on Facebook is also meant to be a platform for your thoughts. For our thoughts and comments on geographical topics, not only the ones we discuss right here in the show. So please, frontliners, feel free to go to facebook.com/geography and like it if you haven't already, and comment on geographical topics or answer to the posts of fellow frontliners, even better, so we can keep up the discussion on a variety of different geographical topics. Yeah, and the most interesting posts are always included into the next episode on Frontline. Like 2 weeks ago, remember when a Frontliner posted this interesting link to a YouTube video about the High Line in New York City? Urban renewal? Yeah, that was something we only talked about because of this post. That's great. So, besides supporting the show, maybe by downloading the flyer and handing it out to friends and colleagues or so on, think about just supporting the show with your intellectual input, with your brain, and become a producer of the show. This way, that's going to be even more interesting. This jingle represents a section that only once in a while makes it to the show. If you're studying abroad, if you're a fellow at a foreign university, for example, like I am right now, or if you go on field trips and excursions, even if you're on holidays, private holidays, you should really tell us about it. I mean, I'm not talking about holiday destinations and touristic reports like, oh, it's so great, so much sun and so much water. I'm talking about geographic content, of course. So the idea behind sending in your travelogues is that it's always a good thing to try to experience geographic topics in your day-to-day life. And by planning on telling us about it, just by planning to do that, you will keep your eyes and ears really open, wide open, while you're living or studying or doing something else abroad. So let us know about what happened and try to describe it. By using your geographic vocabulary, perhaps you experienced something that looked like gentrification, right? Could happen. Find examples for urban reuse we just talked about, or you meet migrants and hear their stories and think, oh, that's kind of interesting because I know this theory on migration and blah, 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 blah. And you can just send that in. And the possibilities are kind of endless. Yeah? And by letting us be part of your experience, you not only train yourself to describe what you see, so to describe it really accurately, right? But to also give all the frontliners, all of us, another reason to love our discipline. Geography with the possibilities to do empirical research, travel to foreign countries and try to understand patterns, processes and so on. That's really amazing. So we should really try to inspire ourselves. So next time you're packing your backpack, make sure to have your audio recorder with you. And then you can record your thoughts directly and send them in to comment@geography.com. That's right. We haven't talked about last week's quick vote yet. Within the topic of urban renewal, we spoke about Diocletian's palace, remember? The remains of this huge Roman complex, Diocletian's palace, that now hosts the downtown area of Split, the city of Split in Croatia. And I wanted to know what you think it would mean to live in such an old structure in this Diocletian's palace. So the question was, living in Diocletian's palace? And some of you did decide to take part in the voting and submitted their opinion with a single click. Yeah, that's really easy. Remember that you can always do this by going to this this week's episode's website or to the current episode's website on geography.com or checking the quick vote link on facebook.com/geography. So, living in Diocletian's palace. No one of the frontliners thought this would give you a deeper understanding of life because you would be part of the history of Split and so on, right? So no one thought that. But it's not totally unimportant. 33% of the frontliners voted for answer B, a clever reuse of old stones. Well, okay, good. And 66% said it would signify a postmodern lifestyle element. Interesting. Let's see if we get some more votes for today's question and more diverse results. So the question for today's quick vote is related to soundscapes. I would like to know, why do we use earphones while walking through the city? Why do we use earphones while walking through the city? A. To tune out the urban soundscape. Answer B. To take a break and relax. Answer C. To have an own urban soundtrack. Or answer D. Another answer. And if you should decide to go for answer D, another answer, or just want to add something to your vote, just add a comment on the quick vote page under the results that pop up after you submitted your vote. That's pretty easy. And because we just talked about travelogues, and coming up next, by the way, is Humboldt's voyage to the Americas, I decided to give the travel aspect a little more credit today. This is Billy Zerbe with this song from his album Bluesin' Again. And how's this nice blue piece of music being called? Travelin' Funk.
Sunday night, my bags are packed, and I'm not happy at all. It's the same old thing, I gotta catch that plane. Time just seems to crawl, 'cause I'm traveling. Before you
Billy Zerbe from the album Blues, and again from the Podsafe Music Network. You find that on music.mevio.com. And again, both links to the download of the album of the US and a German version of the album from the iTunes store are available in this week's show notes. So, coming back to Travelogues. Like our own experiences from field trips and excursions, it's interesting to hear about former voyages that were made. Alexander von Humboldt, he's considered to be one of the founding fathers of geography. He did a journey to the Americas in 1799, and from the diary he kept, it's not too hard to get some good ideas about how empirical research and observation looks like. So last time he was almost ready to depart from the Canary Islands to leave for South America. So just let's go on reading. Chapter 1.3, Passage from Tenerife to South America, the Island of Tobago, Arrival at Cumana. We left the road of Santa Cruz on the 25th of June and directed our course towards South America. We soon lost sight of the Canary Islands, the lofty mountains, which were covered with a reddish vapor. The peak alone appeared from time to time as at intervals the wind dispersed the clouds that enveloped the Piton. We felt for the first time how strong are the impressions left on the mind from the aspect of those countries situated on the limits of the torrid zone, where nature appears at once so rich, so various, and so majestic. I would think that one of the interesting things in this paragraph is the remark on the high intensity of impressions. If you're on a field trip and you have a very tight schedule, and I usually have that when I'm on a field trip, don't know about your excursions, and you begin to mix up places you've visited after only about 3 days or so. That's crazy. You're like, oh, we went there 2 days ago. No, it was this morning, right? Really? So there's such an impact of information, such a load, new things to see and learn about that you almost can't keep up with the speed of these new things that hit you. So that's really, really, a thought that might be worth writing a diary, keeping a travelogue all the time you're in the field or away, to not lose all the information and the thoughts you had while being there, right? So I'm going on reading. Our passage from Santa Cruz to Cumana, the most eastern part of the new continent, was very fine. We cut the Tropic of Cancer on the 27th, and though the Pizarro was not a very fast sailer, the Pizarro's the ship Humboldt is on, we made in 20 days the 900 leagues which separate the coast of Africa from that of the new continent. We passed 50 leagues west of Cape Bojador, Cape Blanco, and the Cape Verde Islands. The latitude diminished rapidly from the parallel of Madeira to the tropic. When we reached the zone where the trade winds are constant, we crossed the ocean from east to west on a calm sea, which the Spanish sailors call the Ladies' Gulf, El Golfo de las Damas. In proportion as we advanced towards the west, we found the trade winds fix to eastward. Two things about this passage. First, feel free to look up the route, right, on a map. Perhaps just on Google Maps, do that while you're listening to this piece now. It seems that this has been quite a journey in 1799. Wow. And second, if you're somewhat familiar with climatology, there's a question for you. Is the situation that he describes here, is it typical for this part of the sea or the ocean or the world? I'm sure you've learned about winds some time ago, most of you, right? And so maybe there are one or two listeners that can clarify here and send in their thoughts or comments if it's actually like this, what he described. I will continue with climatology for a second. In the Atlantic Ocean, the longitude as well as the declination of the sun influences the direction and limits of the trade winds. In the direction of the new continent, in both hemispheres, these limits extend beyond the tropics 8 or 9 degrees.
While in the vicinity of Africa, the variable winds prevail far beyond the parallel of 28 or 27 degrees. It's to be recredited on account of the progress of meteorology and navigation that the changes of the currents of the equinoctial atmosphere in the Pacific are much less known than the variation of these same currents in the sea that is narrower and influenced by the proximity of the coasts of Guinea and Brazil. The difference with which the strata of air flow back from the two poles towards the equator cannot be the same in every degree of longitude. That is to say, on points of the globe where the continents are of very different breadths and where they stretch away more or less towards the poles. So, that, as I said, that's totally about climatology. Nice. So, looking at the time, it's going to be a pretty long episode anyway, so let's stop right here and continue from Humboldt's notes in the next episode. There is an upcoming conference I wanted to tell you about. It's called Soundtracks. Hey, that's something. Surprise. So Soundtracks, music, tourism and travel. And that's taking place July 6th to 9th, 2012 in Liverpool in the United Kingdom. I'm reading from the website. And here it says, as an expression of culture, a form of intangible heritage, a signifier of place and a marker of moments, music provides an important and emotive narrative for tourists. Indeed, it's increasingly difficult to imagine tourism in silence, outside of the scores and songs which accompany the punctuated journeys. From touristic performances of traditional dance, pilgrimage, to the homes and graves of composers and singers, impromptu street entertainments, tours to concerts, attending festivals, to the sounds of the car radio, the traveling with iPods and the music of hotel lifts, music can both activate and shape the journey and passively permeate its duration. Music can both define and transcend the borders of destinations, emphasize and challenge notions of tradition, provide opportunities for liminal play, transgression and resistance, and help define the identities of visitors and the visited. Hey, as I'm reading this right now, perhaps I should go there. So if you're interested in it, Soundtracks, Music, Tourism and Travel Conference coming up in July, early July in Liverpool, UK. And that's about it. Episode 119 of Geography Frontline is over. I'll bring my mic and mixer to the AG and really hope that I'll find some time to produce 120 next Monday. I really do. If not, I'll talk to you soon after I return to Austin. Keep sending in comments, suggestions for the new topics and so on. Have a great week, frontliners, and never forget, the network is us.